Welcome to Who Knew. We are fans of the current series of Doctor Who, and here we discuss our likes, dislikes, and insights into the modern regeneration of the show. Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher, or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/whoknewpodcast. All our episodes are on whoknewpodcast.com. You can leave comments there, or email us at whoknewpodcast@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram and Twitter account. Tweet at us at whoknewpodcast, and find us on Facebook. Today's episode is episode 4 of season 5, The Time of Angels. The Doctor reunites with River Song when a weeping angel sabotages a spaceship and makes it crash on Alfalfa Metaxas. This episode is written by Stephen Moffat, directed by Adam Smith. It originally aired on the 24th of April, 2010, and was watched by 6.8 million viewers. Hi, this is Eugene. Let's introduce ourselves.
This is Brian.
This is Josh.
Hello, sweeties. This is Kelsey.
Hello, this is Auburn.
Frank here.
A guard on the spaceship Byzantium walks around aimlessly, thinking he is in a sunny meadow. Alistair, the owner of the spaceship, wipes hallucinogenic lipstick from the guard's face and goes to find the woman who put it there, River Song. In another part of the ship, River etches a message for the Doctor onto a black box and proceeds to an airlock, winking to a camera along the way. 12,000 years later, the Doctor and Amy are in the largest museum ever and find that same box. It is a home box, similar to a black box on aircrafts, but it travels home with the ship's data when the ship no longer functions. The writing, in old High Gallifreyan, simply reads, "Hello, sweetie." The Doctor steals the box and they escape in the TARDIS. He hooks the box into the TARDIS monitor and sees River winking at the camera, well, at him, and he follows her as she goes to the airlock. She is stopped by Alistair and two guards and explains she knows what he has in the ship's vault. Before the guards can kill her, she rambles a set of numbers and words, coordinates of her location. The Doctor sets the TARDIS for that space and time. She blows open the airlock and is sucked out into space when the TARDIS materializes and the Doctor opens the door for River to fly inside. The Byzantium is flying away when she orders him to follow that ship.
And now we have the opening credits. I mean, I think it took you longer to read that than we actually saw it, because there was just a lot packed into that opening.
There is so much in this episode.
If I'm not mistaken, this is only the second episode with River?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Well, second story.
Second story, yeah.
Right.
Third episode.
Yeah. Watching this the other day, it's a lot more fun than when I originally watched it, where you're like, what's going on? What is she doing? Why would she look into the security camera? I mean, it creates a mystery when you don't understand it, but I don't think they should have changed it, but it's just interesting to watch it now, like, oh, someone watching this for the first time would have no idea what she's doing.
But watching the first time, you see Alex back playing River Song, and it's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, you remember that, oh, she's dead, so this is an earlier supposed version of her. Mm-hmm. So it's like, great, we get to find out a little more. But I think this episode definitely wins from being able to watch it more than once. Mm-hmm. On the second viewing or third, you get a lot more out of it.
Well, because the reveal of River is kind of slow. Like, we start with the laser gun and just mm-hmm. see, like, the eyes and the close-ups. But I really enjoyed, like, that slow build to getting to see River again. And it added to that tension of this opening. And the black and white security footage also kind of helps add to, like, what's going on. There's so many different layers.
And did anyone catch that shot of the captain of the ship or whatever he was, the guy that was chasing her in the tuxedo in the hallway behind him?
Alistair.
Alistair, yeah. It was exactly like the opening of a James Bond movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not anyone of note from the James Bond world, is he, that actor?
I don't think so. I did look him up.
I did like the way that they did the show where, in her presence, she's walking around, and then 12,000 years later, they're able to watch it.
Right.
And cut back and forth between the two so you can see what's really happening.
Yeah.
And that's how the Doctor would see it.
The music's really good there.
Because it is happening in real time for the Doctor as well.
Right.
This is where I need you at this point in time. It was great. I just really liked how they put that together.
I can't believe that they paid for location shooting for that opening shot of the guy in the park. I mean, they went out to a park and shot that. really, I mean, yay, but wow, you spent money on that. And then they went to that church for the museum, which I thought was a great location for the museum. Because I think it was like three or four times of watching the episode before I went, wow, that's a church.
It was gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
It's a gorgeous.
And it worked well as a museum.
Speaking of the opening, they spent more money, not just locations, because that guy with the lipstick that's wandering around in a daze, his name is Mike Skinner, and he's the lead singer of the band called The Streets.
Oh, I know The Streets.
Is that where you're from?
No. But I do know that
when you're walking around on, what do they call them?
Feet.
So the connection with that is that Adam Smith normally directs a bunch of The Streets music videos.
Oh.
And so he got Mike Skinner to do the opening.
That's why they spent the money.
Thank you.
All will be answered. I really enjoy that opening sequence. I mean, a cold open within a cold open type of thing, mm-hmm. because the sound design, it's eerie, like ambient music, and then you get the crows. And I just think it worked well. Like, we're just as confused as this guy. Where is this episode going?
It reminded me of, in hindsight, it was kind of foreshadowing to a later scene in the part two of this episode, in the forest.
And the first mention of the Headless Monks.
Yes.
The name of this episode is Time of Angels. Is that supposed to be a reference to Hamlet and Shakespeare? And Flights of Angels, sing thee to thy rest. Flights of Angels and Time of Angels just popped into my head that there's a correlation there. Because every time we're talking about Time of Angels, I keep thinking of Maurice from Bewitched, who always quotes that line.
Oh.
So every time we're saying it, that just pops in there.
Yeah.
See, here I thought you were really well-read.
Well, that's all because of Maurice.
But did anybody notice the TARDIS?
I did.
Is wrong.
Museum?
Which one?
No. Oh. The TARDIS that spins around when the TARDIS goes to get River Song.
There's a shot of just the TARDIS in space.
It's the wrong TARDIS. It's Eccleston and Tennant's TARDIS, not Matt Smith's TARDIS.
Really?
Dun, dun,
do they
dun.
Look that much differently?
It's missing the St. John's emblem. Mm.
There's a sticker one-up on the door that opens, and it's for St. John's Hospital, which was on a lot of police call boxes.
Or ambulance, St. John's?
St. John's Ambulance, sorry. Yeah. Mm. St. John's Ambulance, which was on a lot of call boxes when they were really call boxes. And it was on the TARDIS originally and disappeared, and then Moffat put it back as a little homage.
Yeah, and it's really quick because when the TARDIS materializes, it's not on the front. So when it finally spins.
Well, is that TARDIS like a CG TARDIS?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They basically
the
have
artist. No one told the artist to include the John sticker.
Well, the way CG assets work is a CG asset of the TARDIS would have been built already, and that would have had to been totally retextured.
And the reason why I think this happened is because this is the first episode to go into production. So they were off the heels
of
the previous.
Re-skin or retexture the new CG TARDIS.
Sorry, was this Amy's first time playing Amy Pond?
Yeah, this is the first time that Matt Smith and Karen Gillan are together on screen, production,
the
on set.
On the beach was their first scene. That's why his hair is so
different in length.
Long and...
And then when Rivers says her coordinates, 775/349...
777-5.
X10,012/acorn. That reminded me of the end of the world where the year is 5.5/apple/26.
Mm-hmm.
When River flies into the TARDIS with the air bubble or the atmosphere bubble thing, mm-hmm. it reminded me so much of Dave in 2001 when he blows his airlock with the other airlock and goes through.
But he doesn't have an air corridor.
No. And when River lands on top of Matt, or Alex lands on top of Matt Smith, they did several takes, and a couple of takes, her knee went into, let's just say, places.
His nuts?
His sonic.
So to see them doing take after take after take on the Doctor Who Confidential was like, ooh, that must have been painful.
Unless he's a masochist. That means he likes pain.
As do we. Just kidding.
All right.
River knows how to fly the TARDIS and lands her quietly next to the Byzantium. As they were leaving the TARDIS, the Doctor locks River outside and plans to leave. Amy convinces him to stay, and they join River next to the crashed ship. The Doctor introduces her to Amy as Professor Song, which surprises River, since she hasn't earned that title yet. The ship crashed because of sabotage by the one survivor, a weeping angel that is still trapped in the ship. River contacts Father Octavian, a bishop in a religious military order, who teleports to her location with a few armed soldiers. They plan to neutralize the angel. They need to ascend the rock catacombs to reach the bottom of the crashed ship and enter it from there.
So I'm sure we all recognize the bishop, Father Octavian, as...
Yeah, it's from Downton Abbey.
That's right. He plays...
A real jerk in Downton Abbey.
Oh, he was like a lord or something?
No, he was Downton the newspaper Abbey. Guy who Sir, was new
oh,
money
that's
and...
Right.
Sir Richard yeah. Carlyle from Downton Abbey, right?
Yeah.
He's also in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. He played Hamlet. He was in Gorilla in the Mist. He played Brendan. He's in Tomb Raider as Manfred Powell. And he was in some of the Resident Evil movies as Dr. Isaacs. He was in Kingdom of Heaven as Richard Coeur de Lion or de Leon.
Richard the Lionhearted.
So de Lion.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's French.
Yeah. But we would most recognize him as Jorah Mormont from Game of Thrones. And he is Father Octavian, and he's played by Ian Glen.
Is it Ian with an I?
Two eyes.
Two eyes.
Oh, see? Good thing I asked. We all have two
I-A-I-N.
Eyes.
I really liked watching River fly the TARDIS, and then she knows more about the TARDIS than he does. At this point, she's probably been in that TARDIS more than this doctor has been in his own TARDIS, because it's still a new TARDIS to him. And then I guess this is where we get the joke that like the reason why the TARDIS makes that sound is because of the parking brake that the doctor always leaves
like
on.
The wheezing sound.
But I liked how it was also inferred that he knew that, but he likes the noise, and that's why he does it. He says that.
Oh, I think he's just
covering.
I like the noise.
And also the little part about the blue stabilizers.
Right.
And the blue boringers.
Yeah, I thought of that. You might...
boringers, nothing's happening.
Eugene likes it because they're blue.
They were only said to be blue. We didn't really see the blue lights shine at me. but the fourth doctor with Romana, well, the first Romana, he was also annoyed that by someone claiming to be a better pilot at the TARDIS than he was. And I think that was in the Ribos operation.
Yeah, but it wasn't Romana who knew how to fly it.
Yeah, but he just mentioned that.
Oh, okay.
That he just mentioned that.
The fourth doctor would be annoyed.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the shoes hanging over the monitor bar.
Oh, yeah.
That was just a great touch.
And I like the line, retrospectively now, that River said she learned from the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then going, too bad you weren't there when the doctor's trying to take credit for it.
I took that as she was joking and it was him, to push his buttons.
Retroactively, it's not. She learned from someone else.
There's also a quick little line from Amy, or not from Amy, from River. Earlier, when they were in the museum, Amy says, why do you like museums? Oh, is this how you keep score? And then River says later, this is how he keeps score. And just kind of funny that they both would kind of say things the same way, you know. There might be some reason for that.
Yes.
It's always good to see these team-up combos against the Doctor, like with Donna and Rose, right, when they got together? Or was it Donna and somebody else? But whenever, like, Rose and Jackie or Donna and...
Maybe Sarah Jane? Is he thinking about that one? When other companions get together?
But yes, when you have multiple people and it puts the Doctor, like, back on his heels and he's kind of more in the defensive.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get that often with one companion because he's always in charge, but it's always a nice dynamic when he's not the smartest guy in the room. Maybe he's the smartest guy.
It usually
guy,
happens when companions from other times meet each other, and then there's that.
And that's why I thought of the first one when Sarah Jane comes on board and then she's talking to Rose. Does he still does that thing with a thing or whatever? And then he's just like, well, I don't do that.
Here we start with some of key things of Moffat's writing in that he does a double speak type of thing. For instance, in this one, earlier statement made by the doctor was that, you know, Byzantium crashed and there are no survivors. And when Amy's asking, when Rivers, he's then talking to Rivers saying, I'm not going to be there all the time you're going to be needing me. I won't be there all the time to catch you. And she goes, you are so wrong. There is a survivor. So it's, are you so wrong about not catching her, or you're wrong that you said there are no survivors? But then she leads that right into, you're wrong. They're next, like, there is a survivor, and it's in the belly of the ship.
Did he come up with that character of River Song?
Yes.
Yeah, because to me, knowing, thinking of what about what you're saying and knowing what we know about him, it's almost like her demeanor is the embodiment of the way he writes.
Right. And he was going to be the showrunner, he already knew, when he wrote River Song for the other...
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Right, because that was the fourth year. But yeah, but in an interview, I've read some that he said that he knew. You know, so it was possible, knowing that he's going to be showrunner, he wanted to bring River back, but didn't know if it'd work, didn't know if Alex would be available. But it was just something that was in his mind when he wrote this season.
Right.
Well, I was going to say, I like that it's the 51st century, the church has moved on.
Mm-hmm. So the church is now the army. It's like, yeah, that's going to happen.
Oh, there's a line later, I think. I have that written down. Yep, that's later. Amy teases the doctor about how River treats him and asks if she will be his wife one day. He admits yes, or sort of.
And that's the second time that they're answering a different question of it. Because she goes, you know, you're all grumpy, and she, you know, River's doing all this stuff to you, and she's kind of like, yeah, heel boy. It's like, is she going to be your wife? And he answers, well, you know, yes, you're right. I am Mr. Grumpy today. It's like, well, wait a minute, which one are you answering?
River calls them over to a monitor and shows them a four-second loop of security footage she stole from the ship of a stone figure with hands covering its face. Everyone leaves Amy alone to get ready for the journey into the ship. Amy sees that the angel in the video has moved, even though the time stamp is still the same. It moved again, and Amy stares at it, not noticing that the door has locked behind her. She tries to turn off the monitor, but it keeps turning back on. The angel is now closer and angry. Outside, the doctor and River look through books about the weeping angels and read, "That which holds the image of an angel becomes itself an angel." The angel is now projecting in front of the monitor. Amy calls the doctor, who tries to unlock the door. The doctor tells her to keep looking at the angel. Don't blink. He later amends his advice to keep looking, but not at the angel's eyes.
Gee, thanks. I mean, couldn't have said that before.
Too late. River repeats the quote about what holds an image, and Amy pauses the tape exactly at the moment when the loop begins again. The angel image is gone. The door opens, and the doctor says the angel is on the loose. Father Octavian says that they are ready to enter the catacombs, also known as a maze of the dead. Amy brushes some grit from her eye.
Okay. So.
Buckle up?
Yeah.
I really like this idea, but I also think that just retconning an older villain to encapsulate a new idea, you know, does something to the history of that villain to begin with. So every security camera on Earth that has pointed at a weeping angel that was already established or spread out through the Earth, it's just that they're always being looked at. But at the same time, it's a great device because you can't... It combines that danger with the danger of don't blink and we have to look at it. I mean, I think it's a great setup, but it's really screwing with what ends up becoming the Weeping Angel storyline of ridiculousness for the sake of plot.
I agree with you.
I don't mind the addition of that which holds an image of an angel becomes itself an angel. I just wish Moffat would have stopped there because this is a very scary villain. It's one of my favorites. I own a shirt with the angel, with the weeping angel on it.
Well, then that shirt's an angel.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all coming to kill you.
I bet you it doesn't need starch.
I wore it just for this. I want you all gone. No. But as we go on with the rest of this episode, and even in the same scene, we also get, oh, and by the way, don't look in its eyes.
Yeah.
And like, even Frank was like, why didn't he say that sooner? And it's like, because he didn't know to say that sooner. It's like new information even to the doctor of like, oh, because instead of windows to the soul, this book says that it's a doorway to the soul and you don't know what you're going to let in.
Now, I wouldn't have minded all this if it was somehow explained. These are new attributes to this race where they've evolved to the point that this is a new thing. But they didn't say any of that. This book made it seem like that it was...
always that way.
Always that way. And it's just, you know... Eh. But that being said, I think it's a setup for a lot of great tension and drama and story.
This scene is one of the scariest scenes in modern Doctor Who.
It's creepy.
I will agree,
is,
yeah.
It is terrifying.
Some might say it's petrifying.
No.
Oh, you get a point for that one.
I went and played The Void, which is a VR area here, I know, in Los Angeles and in other cities. So it's called The Void, which is a VR maze you go into, and they can do different programs.
Okay.
There's a Star Wars one, Wreck-It Ralph. One of the ones they have is Nicodemus, where you go back into 1894.
Like the Rats of Nim?
No. It's a evil demon.
Oh.
And so you put this on. The people that you walk in with have different avatars that are on them, so they fit the time period. And it's really cool. But they do have these mannequins in one section, and the lights are going off and on, and the mannequins are moving. And it's like me being the Doctor Who. It's the angels, and the lights go off, and I can't stop looking at them. And it's like, where are they going? And every time you turn, they get closer, and they get closer. And it's terrifying, and it makes watching these two episodes a lot more terrifying.
But Frank, they're autons.
Oh, that one kind of ruins it.
Okay. We've been autons.
My work here is done.
We in no way sponsor the void.
That would
That's
be a battle
season.
To see. Or...
Yeah.
That being said, if the void wants to sponsor, who knew?
Send them our way.
Yeah.
Would not mind at all.
Did anybody notice the white helmet from Silence in the Library inside that space that she's in with the monitor?
No.
No.
You know the helmet
like
I'm talking about,
yeah.
Like
no, I don't know
who turned out the lights,
yeah.
That type. Yeah, so the expedition that River leads, they have a certain white helmet. And when you are looking at the angle that shows in the background, the monitor that Amy's watching the footage on, it's in closer to you as the viewer. I don't know how to explain this.
I'm sorry, but I'm too busy looking at the angel.
Yeah, that's why I think they put it there. It's in the foreground, but in the background of the characters that are watching the monitor. So it's closest to us as the viewer.
It's on the film? It's on the video,
so
or
the
it's in the room
it's
that Amy's
in? The
in?
It's in the room, like that bunker she's
in. In the room that Amy's in.
Correct. And it's hanging on the rack. If you're watching it, it's on the right. So I thought that was a nice touch.
I was a bit confused on how the angel is able to deadlock the ship.
That's what you're confused about?
Well, it's just...
It's not deadlocked.
Yes. Well, I mean, the whole argument between... What were they trying to write with this?
You know,
the whole argument between the Doctor and River, where the Doctor's saying it's deadlocked and River saying, no, it's not. To have them fight that and then have her try and burn into it like she did on the home box and going, it's not
even
warm.
It's possible.
So what did the angel do to the ship?
Two thoughts come to mind. Like, maybe if the video itself is part of the bunker, then the bunker is then effectively becoming an angel. So if it can take control of the monitor is part of the bunker, it's taking control of the whole thing. Or the whole thing later on, what happens, I think, in the second episode, where they're sucking power from the ship.
Right.
So maybe sucking power from the bunker is a deadlock. Oh, and also, too, they have the power to suck the light out of the light. So I think my first idea is the most plausible.
That makes them able to close doors and lock them and then put deadlocks
on
them. Yeah. I think it's that the whole bunker is part of the mechanism. It's a stretch. According to this episode, if he keeps turning the pages, he'll get to a page. He's like, oh, yeah, and they control doors.
Well, actually.
That book, I'll bring up something about that later,
and I'll agree with him.
Speaking of the book, the way that the Doctor scans the book, flips through it, and basically has read the whole thing, is that something we've seen him do before?
That is correct. We have seen him previously do that with the Ninth Doctor, where he goes into Jackie and Rose's flat and he reads through a book like just by flipping through it. And he's I think it's the book is called The Lovely Bones, and he proves and he proves that he can speed read through that. And then it's also in City of Death with Tom Baker that he does the same thing. He just scans.
Yes, he does
through
do that. Yes.
At this point, too, the Doctor kind of gives the audience a little bit of background on the angels with explaining or trying to explain the quantum lock being when any living being sees them.
Yes.
I think is about, paraphrasing what he says, they literally cease to exist and become stone statues. So for me, from Blink and up to this point, I always viewed the angel's defense mechanism as like a game of red light, green light, where they don't really control it. It just is part of their being that when anything is looking at them, they become stone. So,
yes.
And then when you're not looking at them, they may look similar, but they're not stone.
If they're really quantum locked, if the angel doesn't know you see them, they should still be stone.
Right, because it's based on an observer.
Quantum. It's the observer
seeing them, not what they think is happening.
Because it's a real thing, which is really creepy.
Yeah, I almost always imagined that when you're not looking at a weeping angel, it can take on any form.
I always had them as the same physical form.
This scene, I really enjoy the sound design. Like when you get the static playing over and looping with the video, it just amps that tension. Like it's almost like a heartbeat rising because it just keeps coming back. But I don't know, the sound design in that scene is just amazing.
Inside the catacombs, they see hundreds of stone statues. a great place for a weeping angel to hide. Father Octavian tells River that the doctor must not find out who she truly is, or the doctor will not help them. She agrees because she does not want to go back to prison. He sends two soldiers, Angelo and Christian, to check out a side tunnel. They scout around and find the angel, who quickly kills them.
So this episode is already dense with information. We're kind of adding or retconning to the Weeping Angels. And then we introduce again River Song. She's out of time with how we know her as far as linear beings. And then now they add this thing with Father Octavian where he's telling River that the doctor must not find out who she truly is. And it goes back to what we were talking about in, I think it's the 11th hour, where Amy's hiding her wedding date from the doctor, and then the doctor is hiding why he wants her to travel with her because of the crack in the wall. And then now we add Father Octavian saying this other thing, like there's all these weird things thrown into this episode that I felt you could have lifted them and put them in another episode and made this episode more, condense it more and make it more plot driven rather than this other character stuff, which I don't think it needed. And I guess I'm saying is that I want the plot trimmed down so that you can have that balance. And I think that's what makes things more memorable is the balance between character and plot.
It's funny because I was going to say in the next episode that one of my things with that episode is I don't like the plot. I like all the character bits. Maybe there's just not that many character bits in it. But
I enjoy these two episodes. But to your point, Eugene, when I first started watching this again, I was like, yeah, what goes on in this episode? Like, I could barely recall what the plot was going to be. It made me enjoy it. If you told me, all I would know is Jorah Mormont was there and River's Song, and that's when she meets Amy, and they go, and the Weeping Angels are chasing them into the caves. And I couldn't really remember much more past that.
And see, that's what this episode, these episodes should have been. Like, you have this great villain. It should have been about thwarting the villain, capturing the villain, and not this other convoluted stuff.
Now, I enjoy Moffat's run and all this stuff, but it's very obvious he was just like chomping at the bit and like was like shoving all of his ideas into the season, like, and it just gets bottlenecked and comes out like the Play-Doh hair into an episode.
Well, the plot is pretty simple. I mean, River, you can get out of prison if you bring us an army, like you said. And she goes, well, I said I'd bring you something like an army, the doctor. The
equivalent of an army.
And our whole mission is to get to the angel and neutralize it. But then all those other things is just convoluting it to try and put in a lot of seeds of questions that they're going to answer later on in the season.
Like, there's like four bad wolves in this season.
Yeah, yes, and that's what I don't like.
I also don't like if you're going to cram all this stuff in that you want to do, you alter the nature of your villain to make it fit this story than what's previously been established. Yeah, you could make a throwaway line about it, and they kind of do, where the doctor's like, what? That's not how they operate. And that's it, though. There's no justification for it. They're just doing things differently. But when you start to think about it, it's like, that's not what the Weeping Angels do.
And like I said earlier, all you need is the idea of these are a newer form of them or something.
I mean, he hints that the ones that they ran into on Earth were scavengers. And that this is like a full-fledged army. But they're sucking power out of a spaceship rather than sending people back in time. That's very different.
That's right. That's what the original ones did, didn't they? They didn't kill them. They threw them back in time.
And that's why when they do kill these soldiers, it feels like, what are we doing now?
The only reason to kill the soldiers is to ape the library episodes with like the disembodied voices,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which, but that doesn't even make sense.
Right. I actually for a moment got confused, thinking it was the same villain, and then I was like, wait, no, that's different.
Yeah, because you
thought it was the Narsha. What is it? The
Vashta Narada.
Vashta Narada. There's a lot of similarities to that.
Because this,
I think the reason that they killed them is because it's trying to learn how to communicate.
But it doesn't communicate for any other reason than to taunt. And then I actually thought at one point was, what's the actor's name? Jorah Mormont.
Ian Glenn.
I thought it was Ian Glenn in that episode. Was he the leader of that group? And this is like I started to actually get confused with that.
This might be your fan fiction that you write in your spare time.
There is one quick little character moment in this that I like, where they're explaining the planet that they're on, and they're talking about the original species of the planet, the Aptons, and how they have two heads, and they died out about 400 years ago, and isn't that sad? But now this is home to a colony of humans, and there's like 6 billion human beings on this planet now. I love that the doctor's like, human beings, I'll never get done saving you. And he says it in a way that's happy.
Yeah, it's not the Beast Below version of the doctor's view on humanity.
Right.
It's a different version.
It's an fun, optimistic, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, I love running into you. It's always so fun.
Amy keeps rubbing her eye when a huge amount of stone dust pours out. River asks if she's all right, but Amy seems fine. A nervous soldier named Bob begins shooting a harmless statue. Father Octavian reprimands him, but the doctor tells Bob that his fear will let him act fast and save his life. Father Octavian, seeing that Bob is too young and scared, tells him to stay behind and wait for Angelo and Christian so they will cover the rear.
Spoiler alert, Bob was right.
The dust freaked me out.
Yeah.
And then she's like, doesn't seem to remember it, and River didn't see it. It's like, so that, you know, we now know that it was all, you know, part of it's in her brain and it's working that way, but that it wasn't really happening. But it just.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because later on, what happens? Yeah. Again, it's like there's so. I really enjoyed this episode. All the tricks in the storytelling worked, and I was having fun. But it's convoluted, and I had a hard time keeping up.
Just remember that there are 3 clerics with sacred names: Angelo, Christian, and Bob.
I like that. It's funny.
Thank you again, Eugene, for mentioning that this was the first in production, because I was not very happy with the way that Amy's character was being portrayed. So maybe that's why, like, she was still trying to find that character. It was more goofy and more like childish than I think I was used to so far with Amy. Now, I haven't rewatched, you know, past this very far, so maybe she does get that character back. But
what you're saying reminded me of how I felt, is that she took a back seat to the character and became more of the exposition. Like, this is the reason the doctor has a companion, to tell things to save people from things.
But that's what River did. That's what River's role was in this show.
And
yeah, but that's why I think that's what you're feeling. That's what I sort of felt.
It gets much worse.
Amy was the secondary companion.
Yeah, all that Amy was doing was asking, what's going on? Tell me, what does this mean? Who's that? Like,
yeah.
And that just, I felt like Amy took a step back from where I'd seen her.
I thought that was Amy. I mean, I didn't see any difference in that. The only thing I think structurally was, you now had River there, so she's taking more point because she's been with the doctor more. She knows what's going on. So she didn't take a secondary position. But to me, I didn't see it as being anything separate from how she played Amy in other episodes.
Yeah, I'm not sure, like, what rubbed me the wrong way, but I just felt, yeah.
I felt the same way about the doctor. Mm. Knowing that this was the first ones that they were shooting kind of makes me go, like, yeah, I can kind of tell now. But there's one point where he does that anger thing again, like he did in Beast Below, and next it's episode. Like, I'm so glad that went away.
I will say, though, that despite this being the first episode, I think they did a pretty good job. But now, in hindsight, you can kind of see the cracks.
Just one crack.
Crack is whack.
As the main group proceeds up the caves, passing numerous statues, River and the Doctor both sense something is wrong. The Doctor rambles on about the inhabitants of the planet, a two-headed species known as the Aplins. He and River finally notice that the statues only have one head each. They are not statues, but a den of decaying angels that are now moving towards them when they are not looking. These weeping angels are starving. The Doctor realizes that the original angel sabotaged the ship so that it would crash here and the radiation would reawaken these angels. It was a rescue mission for its race.
So the original angel sabotaged the ship before they captured it, or while it was captured?
Who captured it?
The church, or the Byzantium.
I figured it got out.
No. That's what I thought.
Because River earlier said that it's been passed around for generations and it was dormant. And the doctor said there's a difference between being dormant and patient.
Right.
So it was working its way somehow, I think, you know, consciously trying to figure out how to get to its race and help them out. And so when it got to the Byzantium, it's like, we're going to that section. It somehow sabotaged the ship.
Gotcha.
So that it would crash here. Maybe people aren't paying attention on the ship, and it's just walking around. Well, no problem.
It's in a vault. Security cameras.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's in a vault.
That's what
might
my question
not
was.
Have a security camera, but
it does move fast.
Yeah.
So if they leave the door open, it can get out.
It can also break down
to.
Doors.
after a while. So it could have broken the vault door when no one, you know, when everybody was busy chasing River.
Right. Okay.
Or at the party.
I didn't catch that whole thing when I watched it.
Or back to that little vehicle or whatever when it was just Amy and the angel. And we were like, how could it have deadlocked that pod? You brought up, well, maybe it took over the pod and it became the pod. So maybe the Weeping Angel became the Byzantine ship and wrecked it.
Because it was on security. If that's the same theory that we're going
with. The security guards watching the screen could have been taken over.
Right.
Mind controlled to crash the ship.
And see, this is what I don't like about this episode, because everything I know of the Weeping Angels from season 3 is completely thrown out the window. Because now they can become things, or they can take over things, as opposed to you just stare them down and you're okay. And the minute you don't look at them or you blink, that's when they're deadly.
Right.
Now it's like this house can become
That's the thing.
A Weeping Angel.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
What?
Well, that's why originally it was such a great idea. There's you know, something frightening in that simplicity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then it's like the difference between the original Halloween and everything that came after it. You take the embodiment of evil and the boogeyman and you put it in this thing that you don't know anything about other than it's out to get you. Then in the subsequent movies, they explain and they tell you Michael Myers was a tortured kid. He was just this and that and he was abused as a child. I'm like, that defeats the purpose and it makes him not scary at all. And so I think that's what they're doing to the Weeping Angels in these two episodes, is they're giving us too much information, and it takes away the mystery.
It's very common, though. The same thing happened to the Borg.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, even from the moment they did Best of Both Worlds, which was only their second appearance, they're weakened from their first appearance. And then they just continuously got weakened after that.
I mean, I kind of like the changes, that there's more to it, but going into a ship and that kind of thing, it's like it's going too far.
Well, that's the thing.
You need to just do, if you do constantly stare at it, it can then get into your brain through it, through the eyes, being, because we do say window is a doorway. That I like, but then going into the ship and doing that, and if you're a book and you have somebody drawing it, it's like, that went too far.
Yeah.
In my mind.
See, I personally don't see it becoming the ship. I see it as there's some sort of essence inside the videotape, and it's when Amy's looking at the videotape that draws that essence out, and that's how it suddenly has power.
Because the doctor did say it was a projection of it. It wasn't the angel itself. The angel itself.
The fact of the matter
is,
we can't figure it out because it's not clear. And like to be what you were saying, I agree. Like I enjoy all of the scary stuff that these creatures are doing. It just lessens the original, like retconning it. Midichlorians.
Oh gosh.
Because like what you said, Frank, is I like that idea that the windows are the way that the angel can get to you, your eyes. If it had been explained that the way to defeat or to halt the angel is to stare at it, but if you stare at it too long, then you are in danger of becoming a Weeping Angel yourself. That makes it more scary, but they went a little too far.
Right.
In making something, trying to make something scarier, they explained too much and it made it less scary. One thing I will say that I do like about this scene is when they're descending into the caves and the doctor says, I think he's speaking about the church. Then they had laws against self-marrying and what was that all about? But that's the church for you. Or, no offense, Bishop. And then Father Octavian responds with, quite a lot taken, if that's all right, doctor. I just like that little banter. It just, it gave me a little bit of character. I don't know, it just painted something in a far-off future that I felt wasn't really needed to be explored, but it gave me enough.
And it's continued later when Amy's like, the divorces would be terrible.
Yeah.
That's adding layers to it. But with the way Moffat's writing, his style is that he gives you so much of that information, and it isn't just banter. It's important information that they are talking really fast, going on and on, and you miss it when it's like, are you trying to give it to us or not trying to give it to us?
It becomes
why are you trying to hide it from us? Because during this whole conversation, they're talking about these species have two heads, and they're going on marrying themselves and the divorces, which are all jokes about it. But the information they're trying to put in there subtly so you don't really get it, but saying, no, we did tell you. The way that Davis does it, Russell puts it out there, and we have to go back and go, oh my gosh, you did give it to us. We just didn't see it. Here, it's hidden underneath all these other jokes and things.
for me, I don't mind it here. By the end of Moffat's run, I'm tired of it. Because you are literally going, am I supposed to remember that? Is that right. important?
It's like being in school. Will this be on the test?
Yeah, make it more work than entertainment.
In a way, he's writing these episodes like one may write a novel, where you digress to what's in someone's head mm-hmm. and the history of that coffee table and things like that, that are all these important side shoots. And a story that can take place on 120 pages ends up being a 500-page book. But you can't write, you know, this is what happens when you write a television show or a movie in that regard. That being said, I really like it.
It's also hard. Yeah, it's also hard doing the synopsis for this, going, is this important? Is this not important? Right. We're going to put it into our little synopsis so we don't forget it. Yeah. And then go, oh, that's right. They mentioned something like this, which comes up in two episodes later on.
Yeah, that's the difference between writing a novel and writing a script, better known as the J.K. Rowling problem.
I thought the set and either the matte painting or the CGI Maze of the Dead looked awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked how they did
Yeah, most that. Of that. You mean just the maze? And
when they took it back, when there's six levels to it, and you can see them walking, and then if you can freeze that, like an angel.
When he punts the...
you can just look at all the detail and how they put it up, and you're looking up this cavern, and there are all these statues around. It just really, I thought, was done really well.
And the all the statues being different and worn was really cool. Like, they were all very individual, and each statue looked different from the others. So, yeah, the art direction was really good this episode. Both these episodes.
I also liked how River put herself on the same level intellectually as the doctor when she said, I can't believe we didn't see this. You know, it wasn't you didn't see it or I didn't see it. It's just, I liked when they both figured it out that the statues only have one head, and they both, I can't believe we didn't see this.
And it gives her a history. Yeah.
Doesn't he turn and look at her and say, there's something wrong? It's like, I know you're going to figure, I know you feel something's wrong. I know you're going
right.
to know it in a second, too.
And it was really quick where he goes, and she's like, oh, no. And then she goes, how did we not see this?
They're an old married couple, partly.
The one other thing that I like about this scene, or I guess most of this episode, is that light on Alfalfa Matraxis has a sound.
Oh,
Every time.
Yeah, I
love that. I don't know. I've been just commenting on this great sound design this whole episode.
I really didn't even notice, to be honest. I've got to watch that again.
Well, at first I was like...
You're the flashlights.
Yeah. I was like, what is that noise that keeps happening?
And that's why it's done well, because you don't notice it.
There was one spot in the second episode that I really jumped out to me both times I watched it. It's when the doctor's figuring out something and he makes a circle with his finger.
And it goes through the beam of light. And then
There's like a sound effects that goes with both, and it's a little too much.
Bob is caught by the angel and killed. Father Octavian radios Bob to warn him about the statues, and Bob tells them that Angelo and Christian are dead. The angels broke their necks and that he is on his way up to them. The doctor is surprised because that is not something the angels would usually do. He asks how Bob survived, and Bob tells him he didn't. The angel killed him too. The angel is using his brain, his consciousness, to communicate. The angel is coming for them while the other angels are restoring. The doctor confirms that it is the angel from the Byzantium, which means the ship is safe, so they all run toward it. Amy can't run anymore because her hand has turned to stone and is stuck to a railing. The doctor says her hand is fine and that it is all in her head. Finally, he bites her hand to prove that it is not stone, snapping her out of it. They run and meet up with the others. The bottom of the ship is out of their reach, 30 feet above them in a cavern.
I love Amy's response to him about inviting her. Yeah, what do you have, space teeth? It's like this hurts.
I think I started to catch it after the fact, but I thought she actually did turn to stone, but her mind was able to snap out of it. Because since we saw it, and it seemed real. I mean, obviously it was to scare us, but it was a little confusing even after the fact.
But once he bit her, he couldn't bite the stone. Well, then you know that it is in her head.
Yeah,
but that.
That's still not what I thought, because I...
Really?
Yeah, because I was thinking that he distracted her, and then it stopped, but she was so distracted she didn't realize it. So he basically just said, turn and look at your hand. But I still thought, until a little while later, when they did mention it very quickly, that it was all in her head.
Or was it? Because when she looked at her hand, it was stone, and when she wasn't looking at her hand, it wasn't stone.
That's what confused me. I think it was in her head that she just believed it.
It's easier that it was just in her head. It was just the angel. angel insider but messing with her.
I think that the way that the filmmaking was tricked us too much and didn't didn't give us a post idea.
And in production, Matt Smith actually bit Karen Gillan's hand.
Oh, really? To get her to react that way?
To react, yeah.
And all those crazy actors.
Okay, then I got to know, was that the actual bruise, or did they paint the bruise on it later on?
That they did not mention that in the commentary.
She had a bruise?
Yeah, we'll talk about
spoiler, it. Spoiler, sweetie, next episode. It's not a big thing. It's just one thing that we noticed, so and not a really big spoiler.
And then I took that as a reference to Fires of Pompeii, where the soothsayers turn into stone. But that's just a little... That's just me.
What?
Because that's the first episode Karen Gillan appeared in Doctor Who. She was one of the soothsayers, and they were the ones breathing in the lava, ash, fire, and then they turned to stone eventually, the Pyrovillians. But that's how I took it the first time.
I'm really disappointed in the lack of military discipline that this crack team of commandos has on this very, very dangerous mission. Like, yeah,
they're priests.
But they're the best guys of the bishop. But, I mean, before with Angelo and Christian, definitely, but then poor Bob.
Yeah.
This is where, this reminded me of what Josh was saying, where when Bob, where the angel using Bob's voice is now talking back to the humans, and especially the doctor, even that static sound, I think, is the same sound design effect that they used in Silence in the Library of the static from the record, the device, the
psychic link.
Yeah, and, you know, the fact that his communicator is still working, and it felt like a ghosting effect because he kept repeating the same things. And I'm like, no, the angel's just communicating. He's not actually ghosting, and it confused me, too.
Yeah. I think they used a lot of the same things because it worked the first time, but they twisted.
That's when they...
It was motivated the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that they get it too complicated, not keeping it simple for who the weeping angels are. Because like you're saying earlier, when they are seen, they are totally frozen. So they're not really thinking. But here and in the next episode, you know that they're being seen, but they're still talking. Mm. So it's not like they're totally frozen in time themselves.
And one of the things I've actually felt was out of character for the angels was when, through Bob, it was saying that we are doing this for fun, like we killed them. Isn't that what they said? They killed them for fun?
Yes.
Or they're using his voice for fun to make everyone afraid, and that's the fun.
Well, that's in the next episode.
Oh, okay.
Right now, they're just saying that they used Bob so they could communicate. And I'm thinking maybe they tried the other two and it didn't work.
I think they
crushed the wrong part.
No, I think Josh is right. I think Bob early on says that the other two were killed for fun.
Episode, I think it's the next episode.
Well, because Angelo, they took his voice first to get Christian, right?
Oh,
and then Bob goes looking for both of them.
And this is the original angel from the ship, not all the ones around there.
Yeah. Right.
So maybe it's just this one angel, because it had to be the Byzantium and get over to save his race. That's the only one that's just started killing.
I think, you know, this is probably their explanation. Like, well, angels don't kill people. They send them back through time. So why is this angel doing it? And in the writer's room, one of them says, for fun.
But I think it would have been good that it was just this one particular angel, and that was never stated in the script. And that would make a lot different, where this is a rogue angel trying to save his race.
They could have put that in the writings in the book, that this one is different, and maybe made it look a little
different. Well, the book is about the regular angels that were there.
But they could have put that information, what I just said, could have been revealed in the book.
Like they read a page that says, beware of this
angel.
Version.
Name an angel.
It's rare.
Yeah, well, that was a little bit
they really should put the warnings in the beginning of the book.
What's that from?
Doctor Strange.
Okay, right.
Beware, you bought a book.
Another doctor.
Just from a drama TV watching point of view, though, I do love that they gave it Bob's voice because it kept that youthful, innocent, naive tone all the way, you know, snapped his neck, sir. You know, and then that made it just really sad.
And not just his voice, but his whole consciousness and demeanor and
cadence it was still, of how he spoke. Yeah, it's how Bob would have said
it. And I like that they got to the ship and they can't get to it because it's 30 feet in the air.
Yeah.
It's kind of, well, we made it this far. How are we going to get up there?
Need a cliffhanger for a two-parter.
Did you recognize where we, or did you remember where we might have seen that similar light ball thing in a previous incarnation?
You mean the soccer ball?
Yes.
The football?
The football.
That was a tether ball.
In The Impossible Planet, where they throw down the light into the cavern. Except now it's going up.
The angels are messing with the power, making the lights flicker. The group won't last long with the lights out. Bob calls the doctor and tells him that he died in fear. He reminds the doctor that he told Bob earlier that fear was supposed to keep him alive. The doctor let him down. The angels wanted the doctor to know that he failed Bob. The doctor asks the others if they trust him, and he takes Father Octavian's gun. He tells them all to jump once he shoots. He points it upward to the ship and fires.
I got a Dune reference. Fear is the mind killer from that.
I can kind of see that.
Thanks.
I just realized maybe the reason why a lot of us, or just me, thought that like dealing people's vocals is a new attribute to all the angels is because Bob talks in the parole. Like, the angels want you to know this, as opposed to just like, I want to make sure you know this. Yeah. So maybe I just thought, I guess I thought at some point that the angels were all in one consciousness now, talking through Bob.
I thought the same thing until we're talking about it now, which helps me like it more, but it's not clear.
Yeah, it takes us discussing it to kind of iron it out.
But the more you talk about it, you realize those angels aren't awake yet. So it is just this one. When the two soldiers were killed before Bob, that was only one angel, and it was the one from the Byzantium.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And he was sneaking his way, or she was sneaking.
Correct, because you remember we saw the shadow and he had wings.
Right.
And the other angels hadn't had wings.
Okay,
yet.
See, it wasn't until we're talking about it now that I realized there were no other angels in the catacombs or whatever those are, in the caves, aside from that one who was making its way towards them.
No, they were. They were just dormant.
No. But that's what I mean. The only one that
was
awake.
The only one active.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was,
yeah, the other ones couldn't move
That's
very
the thing.
Well,
yeah. There was so much mystery in shrouding what was happening. You really don't get it until you go back and watch it and talk about it.
Right.
And sometimes mystery is deep and layered, and you feel like you peel it off one at a time, where this, it feels like it's a mess that we are, like, unscrambling just to get some sense of it.
This is also the first instance, I think. I don't think we got it in Beast Below or Victory of the Daleks. This is the first 11th Doctor signature speech moment, where he says, you made a mistake. There's one thing you never put in a trap, a silly thing you would never put in a trap. You know, this trap is never going to work because of the one thing you put in this trap.
What is that, sir?
Me. It's a very 11th Doctor moment, and it's the first time he ever did it.
And so when it came to this moment, I was like, oh, could we have this moment without that gimmick of the angel talking through Bob? But I think you could have, because the Doctor is really doing a monologue.
Yeah, he could have just said,
like, the bishop could have been like, what's that?
Right, yeah.
Or like, what do you mean? And the
Tell
Doctor's
us, Doctor.
A trap.
It's put
and
us
then
in
he's
a trap,
like,
not you
what
put
do you?
Us in a trap.
And then, so all Bob's lines during this, as Brian says, iconic scene, or however you put it so brilliantly.
His iconic speech,
yes,
Doctor
moment. It still could have happened without the angel talking through Bob. All of Bob's lines would have just been done by, I would say, Jorah, the cleric. Octavian.
The bishop.
Father.
The bishop.
And I love Bob's lines. I just think it's great.
I enjoy everything that happens in this episode, but I think it's breaking
established rules.
Breaking my heart.
It just didn't need to She's be. She's Kiki D over here.
I didn't get that reference.
I don't think a lot of people did, but we got it.
Oh, who's old? Who's old?
Yeah, oldish.
I didn't get it, so it didn't hurt me.
They might know it soon when Rocket Man comes out.
It's not breaking my heart.
But it may come out soon when Rocket Man comes out.
That's right.
People might know what it is again.
Yes, mm-hmm. Possibly.
For what comes out?
There's an Elton John song called Don't Go Breaking My Heart, and the one who sings it with him is Kiki D.
Rocket Man is about Elton John, so they might put that in.
A biblical reference that I get here is when Bob is always saying, come and see. And the book of Revelation, the quote, the angelic being says, come and see, in chapter 6. And he's mentioning about all the seven seals being broken.
Oh.
End of time.
Mm. Well, they had six, how many levels in the Maze of the Dead? Was it six?
It was six.
It was
six.
Think.
It was six.
Yeah.
So chapter 6.
And Dante's Inferno was seven?
I think seven's a better number.
So we get Alex Kingston back as River Song. Woo-hoo! We mentioned Mike Skinner as the security guard and the member in the Streets band. He's the guy in the beginning with the lipstick. Then we mentioned Ian Glenn as Father Octavian. And then Simon Dutton plays Alistair in the beginning. He's the James Bond-ish person. Then Troy Glasgow plays Angelo. Darren Morfitt plays Marco. He was in Star Wars The Last Jedi. He's a transport deck officer.
Mm.
Mark Springer plays Christian. And David Atkins plays Bob. So, the time of angels, who is this episode good for? Or more specifically, this episode is good for who? A new viewer, a casual viewer, a fan of the show, or a diehard? You sound like you want to go first.
I don't, but I will.
You just look like you wanted to say something.
I like this episode a lot more than I did when I first watched it. And it is fun. It has some good moments. It is too much information spoken too quickly that you're supposed to actually get rather than just being a joke or a quip. I think they're casual or new. Too much is going on and you're going to lose interest or you're going to be lost, and that you may not even continue watching Doctor Who. It's like once you understand what's going on a bit with who the characters are with Amy and the Doctor, then you'll stay with it. I think there's too much going on that you have to be a fan to really get the most out of this episode.
I think I can agree with a lot of what you said, Frank. I would not introduce anybody to Doctor Who with this episode. I think if somebody were like a horror lover, I think Blink is a much better example of the angels and their story. And yeah, between Amy and the Doctor's relationship, 11th Hour, of course, is like the start of it. So I think I'll agree with you. Put it into the fan. Because it's not like watching it I'm turned off or like really don't understand or just really like angry at the end or anything. Like I've seen worse episodes of Doctor Who, so I'll stick with fan. I don't have to push into the diehard.
So it's always hard categorizing a first part of a two-parter, I feel, because you're like, oh, do you, you know, you have to watch this to watch the second part. And I feel like the first time around that I watched this episode, I missed a lot of the plot because I was too busy trying to remember who River Song was, and I was too busy trying to, like, there's just a lot thrown at you. So as a casual viewer, I don't think you'll get a lot out of this episode, whereas, like, I watched it on, like Frank said, repeat viewing, and I enjoyed it more because I didn't have to be explained who River Song was. I knew who she was. It was just exciting to see her, and then I was able to listen to more of like what the episode is actually about. So I'm also going to say fan. I am so indecisive, but I just don't know where to categorize it because it's a two-parter. So it's like, can someone casually watch this and not have to watch the second half? If the answer is yes, like a casual person could watch this and not have to watch the second part, then I would recommend it for a casual viewer. But as we'll discuss in our next episode, for me, the second part of this just ruins all the great work that was done in the first half. So that's why I wouldn't want someone who's just like casually watching to watch this episode. So it's just, I just don't know where to categorize this episode. I don't know, guys. I just really don't know. I think if you don't know where to place this episode.
But I think if you don't know, it's a fan. Like, if you were more, anyone will enjoy this.
Yeah, but I want everyone to experience Amy in the...
I don't think the decision we make here in the podcast will affect if someone watches or not. Yes, I second all that, or fourth it. I would almost say diehard, but I'm not a diehard, and I really enjoy it. So I say fan, for all the reasons you guys are talking about.
I'm going to say a casual viewer, because this episode has Alex Kingston, and that's worth one extra point every single time for me. She makes everything she's in with Doctor Who better, regardless of the episode. And I do like all the little character bits going on. So I'm going to say casual, and that there would be enough. Even if you're confused, I think you might get intrigued by what's going on with River.
Yeah, it's a confusing episode, so if a casual fan is confused, that's okay. I could see this being an enjoyable episode for a casual, but...
For me, I have very mixed feelings about this episode. I remember when I first watched it, it was so built up that the Weeping Angels are returning, and then I watched it, I was kind of let down. And then now talking amongst the fans that we've been these conventions and things that we've been going to and interacting with them, they seem to like these two episodes. And I was going into this viewing this time for this recording of the episodes. I tried to stay very objective, and I still found myself asking too many questions. And I think we kind of answered them on our own. And this whole episode, I have been doing sort of a compliment sandwich. Here's a bad thing, here's a good thing, here's a bad thing. And the opposite, here's a good thing, here's a bad thing, here's a good thing. So I will end with a compliment sandwich. I really enjoy the sound design. It's really creepy. It adds great atmosphere to the episode. Then the fact that River is returning, yay. The Weeping Angels are returning, yay. But then you get two of them, and I don't think it works as well. If we had one of them returning in this episode, I think the episode would have been better, because then you didn't have to service two outside entities, and you could concentrate on one, Amy and the Doctor, instead of two things, Amy and the Doctor. And I like how creepy this episode is. This episode does well in just creating that atmosphere of you don't know where danger is going to come from. And it ends on a good cliffhanger. I like that line that the Doctor gives, and then he shoots the gravity ball.
The Doctor actually has a gun and uses it.
Yes.
Just not in the way that it's really meant to be used. So that's good.
Mine would be for a fan, since we talk about this episode, or this episode is talked about amongst fans, and I think us revisiting it, we have to be fans in order to go back and watch them again and kind of figure out, hey, that's a piece of dialogue that's important, but I didn't hear it the first time. So you definitely have to be a fan, because you're going to go and revisit this episode. So that wraps up The Time of the Angels. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time when the future becomes the present.
You've just listened to an episode of Who Knew?
Our wonderful theme music is by Michael Grady.
Find him on Facebook at The Universe Explodes.
All our episodes are engineered by Auburn.
You can find him at auburnbinkley.com.
You can also find this show in several places.
Follow us on Twitter at Who Knew Podcast.
Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast.
Visit our Facebook page.
Please leave comments, reviews, and click like to help support Who Knew Podcast.
Also, listen to us on your Amazon Echo by enabling a podcast skill.
All our episodes are on whonewpodcast.com.
This podcast is inspired by Doctor Who,
the longest-running sci-fi show in history.
And especially the revival, spearheaded by Russell T. Davis.
Thanks to Russell, Sidney Newman,
Verity Lambert,
Ron Grainer,
Delia Derbyshire,
and all those involved in the adventures of our favorite Time Lord.
Your work continues to inspire and entertain. Oh, but once you see the shoes, you know it's River.
Those shoes.
Maybe some people did. I did not.
Cut all that out.
But you a song, River Song.
Did she say that?
No.
I was like, I don't know if there was something more that I missed.
Please edit this section out.